You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Today's show is jam-packed. Have three wonderful guests in three different segments, so a bit of a longer show for your Friday/Saturday Locked On Cavs listening. Up first, Brady Klopfer talking about Alonzo McKinney, the Warriors, ex-Warriors guard now on the Cavs. Secondly, Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report talking about the season opener and what to look for on Saturday. May have him back on this weekend, depending on what his time having to drive home looks like after the Cavs play the Pacers in their home opener. And then lastly, Adam Friedman from the Locked On Pacers podcast joins me to preview Saturday's game. Again, that's an 8 p.m. tip. We'll have a recap up on Saturday, late at night, early Sunday morning, most likely is when you'll listen to that. But I'm not going to delay any longer. Here is today's jam-packed episode of Locked On Cavs for Friday, October 25th. Joining me now is Brady Klopfer. You can find him on Twitter at BradyKlopferNBA. He primarily writes about the Warriors at Unstoppable Baby, the Golden State Warriors blog at SB Nation. Also, he writes, did a ton of NBA coverage this summer, bylines at places like the LA Times, The Athletic, The Ringer. Brady, what's going on, man?
Not a lot, Chris. Just excited to finally have the NBA season here. It kind of felt like one of the longer off seasons in recent memory.
Yeah, before we get into what we're going to talk about, which is Alonzo McKinney, for you as someone that spent a lot of time covering the WNBA, that dedicated, you know, your summer to that instead of, you know, like some of us getting a break, how is the transition going from the WNBA season right into the NBA season kind of been for you? Do you feel like you needed a break? Do you feel like are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go, to be honest. It's pretty smooth for me. In large part, just even though they're both basketball, they feel like two separate entities enough to me that when the NBA season starts, it always feels like, oh my God, I haven't had the NBA in my life for so long. And when the WNBA season starts, it's like, I haven't had the WNBA in my life for so long. So I think I kind of hold them separately enough that the transition always feels smooth because I'm always just kind of in the writing and watching basketball mindset. But I never feel particularly kind of over flooded with them because they kind of still feel different to me.
Yeah, that'd be sure. So you don't have to cover a Warriors game until Thursday. We're recording this on Wednesday. People are hearing this on Friday. So this is a little bit kind of back in time as we talk about this. But the Cavs signed Alonzo McKinney, which is why you're on. He played for the Warriors last year. He's 27-year-old wing, 3-4 kind of type. Was waived by the Warriors in place of former Cav Marquese Chris, which, as someone who wasn't following the day-to-day of the Warriors camp, caught me by surprise a little bit. How did McKinney, who played in the finals last year, who was a big part of, stepped really deep, really well in last year when they had all those injuries, how did he end up being the guy that gets cut and waived or whatever, depending on how you want to say it, in place of Marquese Chris?
Well, it was really a bunch of different factors all coming together, and it kind of was just a slowly evolving situation where, you know, when training camp started, it really felt like Alonzo McKinney's spot on the team was secure, and Marquese Chris had no chance of actually making the team. And that slowly started to change and slowly started to change. And by the time they actually made the move official, it really felt like everyone knew that it was coming. It kind of was already destined at that point. So a few different things. I mean, the most important part of it was that the Warriors are hard capped due to the sign and trade for D'Angelo Russell. And they are so close to the amount of money that they can spend under the hard cap that they are within, I believe, about $250,000 of their actual limit. So they don't have any room to play with. They only have 14 players on their roster. And Alphonso McKinney was on a non-guaranteed contract, which allowed them to waive him, something that none of the other 13 players on the roster were on. So just from a practical standpoint, that's why he was the casualty. But a lot of things went into it. Marquise Chriss impressed. Kevon Looney and Willie Cauley-Stein, who are the only other two centers on the roster, both missed the entire preseason with injuries. So they really had a need to sign another center. But then ultimately kind of the biggest one was Alphonso McKinney is 27. He's not really a prospect anymore. Marquise Chriss is 22, potentially has a lot of untapped potential, a higher ceiling that the team can try to dive into. And Alphonso McKinney is, you know, he kind of is what he is at this point. The Warriors have Alec Burks, they have Glenn Robinson III, and they kind of had three wings to fill that small forward position. And while none of them are particularly inspiring, they are all a tiny bit redundant. There wasn't really a need to keep all three of them, and he was the one with the non-guaranteed contract.
So what is he? If a Cavs fan is unfamiliar with what he sort of is, and I agree that he is sort of our finished product. Like, he's not going to take a huge leap at this point, most likely, which is just a product of him being 27. What is he as an NBA player?
That's a question that, unfortunately, the people listening to this probably aren't going to like my answer. Because, truthfully, I love Alphonso McKinney. He is a great guy, a tremendous locker room guy. The organization loved him. The players loved him. Beyond that, I really think he is a fringe NBA player. He is an outstanding rebounder for his size. I think he's more naturally a three. He's, you know, in the 6'7", 6'8" range and kind of long. So naturally a three, but can definitely play the two. Tremendous rebounder, especially on the offensive end. He knows how to use his athleticism to grab rebounds. He knows how to find the right angles and fly in and grab the ball, especially on the offensive side. And then something else he does really well is he knows his role, which is a very important thing. He is not a very offensively talented player, yet last year he had a notably above league average true shooting percentage, in large part because he simply didn't try to do too much. His shots really came from transition opportunities, open three-pointers when he was left wide open, and put back some offensive rebounds. And he really never tried to do anything more than that. Now, maybe that'll change a little bit now that he's not, you know, sharing the court with Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson. He might feel like he deserves more shots now in a different role. But he's been good at playing his role and knowing what his role is. But unfortunately, he just doesn't have a lot of NBA talent. He is a very, very poor defender. Gets lost off ball all the time and really has a difficult time keeping his man in front of him. He's kind of known as a shooter because he did attempt a lot of shots with the Warriors, but he's not a very good shooter. He shot 35.6% last year, which is not a very inspiring number, not a horrible number, but he was open, wide open on most of those. He was the beneficiary of everyone paying attention to Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson. And he was the, well, we'll let him try to beat us guy. And if you're shooting 35.6% on threes as the, we'll let him beat us guy, that's kind of problematic. His free throw percentages back that up. He was under 60% last year. He's just not a particularly good shooter, which is something of a death sentence in the modern NBA, especially if you can't defend well, and he can't defend well. So, you know, he had an impressive performance last year, stepping into a role that was much bigger than was what he was initially asked to do. And the team loved him. Media loved him. Great locker room guy. But if you want my honest assessment, he's a fringe NBA player who probably should be more of a G League kind of guy than necessarily an NBA roster guy in my eyes.
So when you to kind of round this out, when you think about him joining a Cavs team that he's going from a team that was in the finals last year, a Cavs team that is definitely not going to make the finals, he is stepping into a really bad situation. Does that also sort of impact the kind of, in your mind, just sort of the impact he can provide?
Yeah, I mean, it could go a few different ways, I think, because I think there is a lot of value in bringing in a player who has NBA Finals experience, who has experience playing for a great head coach, in a great offensive system, along great players. I think there is some stability he can bring to a team that obviously is not going to be in contention this year. And, you know, we've seen time and time again that you don't have to be a great player to teach players. And I think, you know, the Cavs have some interesting young players, a lot of interesting young perimeter players in particular. And he can potentially slide into a role where he is teaching them both through his words and his actions how to be a successful NBA player. And the fact that he knows how to rebound and the fact that he knows his role, those may be things that only go so far in terms of on-court value, but they're things that coaches really value and can really impart important skills and habits into young players. So I think in that role, maybe he'll be able to flourish. I'll be curious to see, like I mentioned earlier, if he tries to, you know, bump up his offensive role now that he's playing for a not particularly good team. I don't think that's something that he should try to do. And truthfully, I was a little surprised that the Cavs were the team that ended up picking him up. I kind of thought that because he's 27 and hasn't showed all that much, that a lottery team wouldn't really be interested in him, and that if anywhere, he would catch on with a playoff team that wanted someone on the back of the bench who they felt could be a good locker room guy and contribute a few minutes here and there. So I'll be curious to see what his role is. But I think that certainly his attitude and his approach to the game can be beneficial as a mentor for some of the young players, even though he's really only played one season in the NBA himself, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, he's 27, played basically one NBA season, had a little time with Toronto and with Golden State. We'll see what he provides. We don't know how much he's even going to play. It's going to be one of the things, I think, to watch as we kick off the season again. By the time you're listening to this, the Cavs have played one game, so it's possible that we sort of know what his role is going to be heading into, you know, this weekend's game against the Pacers. But find Brady on Twitter at Brady Klopp for NBA. Again, read his writing at places like Golden State of Mind, also has about it to LA Times, The Ringer, The Athletic. Brady, thanks as always for coming on.
Of course, my pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Joining me now, Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report. Greg, Cavs are back. Played the Magic on Wednesday in like kind of a rock fighty kind of game. What's like the thing you that stood out to you in that season opener between Cleveland and Orlando?
Well, I mean, going into it, the main thing I wanted to see was how Darius Garland was going to do. Obviously, you can't take too much away from a rookie's first game, but I just want to see, you know, with him getting the starting job, how he was going to respond, you know, how his nerves were going to look, how did he stack up against NBA competition, because we haven't seen a whole lot of that lately besides a little little preseason run. So I thought for the most part he looked pretty good. He won play. I think my favorite play his was towards the end. It was almost garbage time, but he dribbled to the left side of the court. They set a pick for him. He came back, and I just thought he did a really good job of not only dribbling out of that, but then he got to the basket. He drew the extra defender, and then he made the swing pass to Chetty Osmond in the corner, and that opened him up for an open three-pointer. And by that time, he had drawn so much attention to the paint. You had Kevin Love open on the wing, too. You could have made another swing pass to him from Chetty. So I thought just having that guy that can draw that attention, and just the way he was able to get into the paint, he had that nice alley-oop to Tristan Thompson. He was really the guy I was looking for. I know, like, you know, he only finished with 8 points, but he hit a couple threes. He did some of the things you expected him to do. He led the team in assists with five. That was really, like, you know, I didn't really care about the team outcome, I guess. Yeah, you want them to win, but that's not really what the season's about. So I was looking at Darius, and I thought for a first game he did all right.
I like that as well. I would say with him, I liked there was like a little – I'll be curious to see how this holds up, I guess, but I liked the energy we kind of got from him where he was looking to pass a little bit and, like, kind of looking to create. That could, like, be a really interesting kind of role for him to make himself distinct from Colin Sexton. Led the team in five assists, you know, probably gets six if he doesn't throw that lob to Kevin Love. Like, probably won't do that again.
Right.
He looks just like has a better feel for the game than I think. You know, and we got hints of this in the preseason, but if you read, like, the draft profiles on him, that was, like, not something that necessarily came up. And, like, I don't think, you know, five games at Vanderbilt really is going to tell you a ton. But I thought that part of his game to me was, like, what jumped out at me, just because we hadn't really seen that before. And it makes him unique on the roster. You know, Dele does a little bit of that, but he doesn't have the athleticism Garland does, or the flow to his game. He's a little more just kind of, you know, straightforward, dead ahead. Clarkson doesn't do that. Colin Sexton plays like 100 miles an hour all the time. That could really make Garland kind of an interesting little bit.
Yeah, I thought, you know, going back to draft night when they took Darius, you know, right away you kind of wondered, okay, position-wise, how's this going to work with Colin? And I think, you know, even just after one game, I think we kind of see just kind of how different they are. Yeah, they're both about the same size, the same height, they're theoretically the same position, but they're both very different in their style of play. And I think, you know, if you can keep getting that playmaking aspect out of Darius, you really do need that. Because I don't know that you're ever going to get it out of Colin. I don't think he's going to be more than a three assist, you know, a game guy. So if you have a guy like Darius who can get you 5, 6, 7 assists a game, I think that's what you need. And, you know, long term, I think that bodes well for that pairing, just because they kind of complement each other with their skill set.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. The other thing for me that I thought was interesting, and I talked about this already a little bit, so I'm just gonna, like, say it and then let you go. I thought it's weird that Kevin Love only had 10 shots, even though he led the team in minutes. It doesn't feel like he's, like, fully integrated into the offense yet. I think there was a little of him, like, calling for the ball in certain spots, but what did you just make of Kevin on the offensive end in particular?
Yeah, I think he finished, I want to say, fifth in shot attempts on the team, which was extremely weird. I mean, I think he was Tristan Thompson was right up there in shot attempts over him. I thought that was, you know, for the Cavs to win, obviously Kevin Love's going to have to get the ball more. He's probably going to have to be your leading scorer on most nights. Tristan Thompson, if he's going to lead, be tied for the team leading points, you're probably not going to win that game. I don't want to take that away from him. If he's your leading scorer, you're probably in trouble. I think this is the time. And, you know, maybe just because he missed so much time last year and coming off all those years where he was the second and third option, I think we really need to get back to Kevin being aggressive again. And now he's got a guy like Darius who's, you know, capable of getting him the ball. You've got Dellavedova who's, you know, a capable enough backup point guard. I think he's going to have to, you know, be aggressive, and he's going to have to demand it. And he doesn't have that, you know, kind of a-hole personality where he's going to, you know, like a Kobe, where he's going to say, give me the ball and get out of the way. But him to be aggressive. He's the oldest player on the team. He's obviously the most skilled offensively, and I think he's got to be at least one or two in shot attempts per game. And for him, he didn't even hit a three-pointer. I thought that was kind of weird. Like, that
took one, only took one
part of his game, right? Only took one, missed it. For him to not even finish with a three-pointer, for that to be such a big part of his game, especially, you know, in his career in Cleveland, I think we need him to be that perimeter threat, and that's going to open up everything. I liked his passing from the outside. I think was it the very first basket of the game? He found Tristan inside. I would love to see them utilize him more as a passer from the outside and the elbows. I feel like they haven't done that at all for the last 5 years. So I just like to see him be more aggressive, demand the ball. I mean, he's got a young team around him. He can do whatever he wants. He can call for it. He can be an aggressive. And I think we need to see more shot attempts from Kevin Love moving forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think getting him, it seems like the getting him, because some of this could be the good Orlando defense, but there's definitely some struggles getting him some passes, like, into the post, you know, like feeding him passes and getting him kind of
sure
post up pass. I think that'll kind of be, you know, I think I think that's going to be something to continue to watching. And I wonder what Beilein's kind of adaptions are. You know, he was talking about, like, in the pregame kind of thing on Fox Sports about, like, watching film on the way home. Like, I just am curious to see, like, what kind of tinkering he does game to game, because it is just a much shorter turnaround than he's kind of used to.
Yeah, the nice thing is you have, what, 3 days off. You have Thursday, Friday, or you have a couple days off before you play again Saturday night. So you have a couple days. I mean, you normally don't get a couple days off in between games in the NBA. So to start the season out like that, I think that's good. The Pacers obviously lost their first game. Was kind of surprising. So they're definitely vulnerable. Now is the time you want to play them before Victor Oladipo comes back and they have all their new pieces kind of figuring out. But again, you kind of look ahead with love and you can make those adjustments. Well, now you've got Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis, and you've got some talented bigs that he's going to have to play against on Saturday too. So it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of, you know, take that next scoring step and hopefully finish as one of the top shot takers on Saturday night.
All right. So what are you looking for on Saturday? What's like the one thing you're kind of most looking forward to seeing?
I mean, there's a lot of things. Obviously, it's going to be the first home game for Darius Garland and Kevin Porter Jr. to see how, you know, they kind of respond to that environment, because opening on the road is one thing, and it's their first NBA game, and that's great. But, you know, just to get in front of the home crowd for the first time, you know, to see how they kind of handle that emotion and those nerves, I think that's going to be a big kind of test for them emotionally and mentally. You know, physically, obviously, they have the talent, but just that new experience for people so young, I think that's going to be interesting to watch how they respond to that. Just to see are we going to get more three-point attempts? I'd like to see that. The free throws weren't good in the first game either. I think they finished at like 67%. And, you know, obviously I don't think we're going to see any rotation changes from game to game. I think it'd be good to kind of set that and at least give it a 5 to 10 game experiment before you make any gigantic changes. But, you know, this season, Saturday, the next game, the next week, this season is all about the young guys and how they're going to adapt and respond on a game-to-game basis and how they're going to grow. And I think that's going to be the most exciting part to watch.
Yeah, 90s jersey is also making their official debut. Can't wait for that. Can't wait to just see what Salt and Pepper is the halftime show. It's going to be interesting. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. I'll be there.
Oh, yeah, I will be there. Greg, I'll get to see you. And this makes my day that I get to see you, talk shit to you and Spencer as we're covering the game. It's going to be fun. I'm glad. I'm glad for that. We're going to be just enjoying the 90s vibes in The Rock, which I don't like calling it The Rock on Saturday.
Well, you were born in like 1999, so you probably don't remember much of the 90s.
No, 93. Excuse me, sir. I was born in 1993.
My bad.
Wow, 99.
Old people like me, that were born in the 80s, we have fond memories of the 90s Cavs and those. You know, I wasn't a big, huge fan of them at the time, but now I don't know. I like those jerseys. They look pretty good. I like them better than the ones last year. So. Look forward to seeing them.
I will probably buy a shirt I can work out in, and with that jersey on, with that logo on it, is what I'll do, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not a jersey
sure.
guy, but I think I'll get like a running shirt or something.
That'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, Greg, I'll see you Saturday. Find Greg on Twitter at CavsGregBR. Greg, as always, thank you so much for coming on.
All right, we'll see you Saturday.
See you, buddy.
Pacers and Cavs fans, welcome in to a crossover episode of the Locked On Pacers and Locked On Cavs podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And joining me, so like I said, for a crossover show, is Locked On Cavs host Chris Manning. Chris, both teams are one game in. How are you feeling so far?
You know, the Cavs have a top five defense. Tony East, your co-host, specifically when I DM'd him trying to set something up today, and he's like, make sure you mention that, which is a big pivot. The Cavs, that's not going to last, but the Cavs will lose to the Magic and kind of a weird game, but now they get their home opener. They're going to wear some wonderful 90s jerseys on Saturday night in Cleveland. Salt and Pepper are doing the Salt and Pepper? I don't know. Are doing the halftime show, and it's going to be an interesting night in Cleveland on Saturday.
Yeah, so we should get everybody heads up. We're just sort of going to riff a little bit on the Cavs. Pacers kind of probably go 20, 25 minutes, so we'll be back and forth. So just if you enjoy the Pacers, enjoy the Cavs, you'll definitely enjoy this podcast. So, I mean, the first question I posted to you before, but – as a outsider of the Cavs kind of thing, what do you try to sell me, I guess, on this Cavs team being what's the best case scenario, I guess, for this Cavs team?
So I think they're the best case scenario is somewhere where they maybe sort of, I think they should win more games than last year, I think, if things go right. That's 19. It's not like a high bar to clear, but you're looking at just, I think, progression from the guys you need to see it from. So that's Kevin Love. You know, him being healthy this year would be huge. You know, what does Colin Sexton look like in year two? Does Darius Garland have a good rookie year? What does Kevin Porter Jr. do? You go down the list, the roster, it's not about, you know, trying to make an unexpected playoff run this year. It's not about trying to do anything where, like, you're trying to win, like, actually win a bunch of games. In my mind, this is really just about getting this franchise, like, on and sort of in the right direction. It's John Beilein's first year. It's the roster slowly turning over. You have all these kind of guys that are not going to be in the team next year, or maybe one of them or two of them will be back on expiring contracts. There's going to be some, you know, some trades and stuff. This year to me is just about, like, seeing how the progression works, setting that kind of culture. That goes with what the offense looks like, what the defense looks like, what kind of structure the overall team has. I think that's really kind of the what makes this group, I think, kind of interesting. I think for me, I'm obviously a little bit biased in this, but I think, like, when you compare them to the Hornets or the Knicks, like, I think there's something more kind of in this moment that is more interesting to kind of look at. I don't know how much markedly better they're going to be than those teams, but I look at some of these other situations that they're going to be going up against. And I think at the very least, this is something where, like, the evaluation is going to be a little more, I think, worthwhile than, like, a Terry Rozier, Nick Batum team in Charlotte or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say the Cavs have the best young player of those three, kind of, not to be mean, but bottom feeder teams in a way. Colin Sexton is a legit player. And I mean, we'll see what his ceiling and what it becomes, but he definitely is by far as the highest ceiling of any probably rookie or second year guy on any of the two teams. But the other side of that, I think the Cavs, what I'm commissioned with this team this year for the Cavs is Kevin Love, right? He's kind of the thing hanging over the whole season where he's probably the only tradable player they have in terms of just, like, getting plus value for him. And at least with the Pacers, I know he's going to, with him and Thompson, they'll be kind of come a different kind of matchup for Turner Sabonis, especially because Love can kind of stretch the floor at him. We'll see if he's guarded by Turner or Sabonis, which one. But for Love, I mean, I don't know what you're feeling, but it just feel like it's Kevin Love's last season with the Cavs, I guess, or is that just kind of out of the left field for me?
I think it's a little early. I think, you know, we're so early in this. He said all the right things. Indication that I know is that he's not, like, gone and said, like, hey, trade me, or, like, this is the circumstance that would kind of lead me to want to be traded and stuff like that. Like, I don't think that's, like, a thing we've really seen from him yet. So I don't think that's, like, really the thing. I think it's about his health first and foremost. So I think he certainly could be traded. I do think there are other guys on the roster that could get you something. Like, you know, Jordan Clarkson has the skill set, even if he doesn't have the stats, and, like, he does have the skill set and, like, the kind of reputation of what he does to, like, get you something. The Cavs are certainly in a position when they got him where they overpaid a little bit to kind of bring him in, along with Aaron Ants, obviously. But, you know, you have Tristan, I think, could help good teams. I think John Henson, if he's healthy, could help teams. I think there are, like, parts that could help them. Kevin, it's just tricky because he has the longer contract. He hasn't been healthy. If he's unhealthy and he doesn't, like, look like Kevin Love, this gets a lot more complicated. He hasn't looked like that yet, but it's still so early in the season that even Saturday, you know, going into next week, I don't know if it's fair to be like, this is the Kevin Love we're getting now. I think there's still some rust being shaken off. This is a guy that hasn't played much basketball, you know, in the last year or so. So I think kind of giving him 10, 20 games to kind of get his legs under him a little bit, get in a rhythm in this new system, I think will kind of matter.
Yeah, I'm also curious just about Darius Garland, right? I mean, he's the other young guy they have coming in. I don't really know what to make of him, to be honest. I think the Cavs kind of just pointed they probably didn't get one of those top two picks, obviously, since they were – they had the best odds to get their number one pick last year, or second best, something like that.
Tied. I mean, I think everyone, honestly, like, if you didn't get one, you're kind of just like, well.
Well, two was still. I mean, I'm a big Ja fan.
You could have the opinion of RJ too. I would say this about Garland. I think he's really interesting because he played. You'll notice this on Saturday, Pacers people that didn't watch the Cavs in their season opener. We'll see that he plays at a little bit of a different pace than you see Colin Sexton play at. He moves a little bit more methodically. He makes more reads. It's not like on his skill set. It wasn't something that showed up in his Vanderbilt tape, the five games he had. But he's got a really nice kind of feel for the game. He's going to shoot from like 30 feet. He's going to take step backs. I think he's really fun. I think he's a guy that I think is really, really interesting. I did a predictions column over at Fear the Sword where I basically said, like, I think he probably finishes like top 4 or 5 in the rookie of the year voting. I think he can have that kind of year. I think the offensive talent's really, really good. And I think his feel for the game, even though he's really young and, you know, is again, another guy that hasn't played a ton of basketball in the last year. I think he's a lot of fun. You just look at his first NBA basket's like a 27-foot three pointer. Like the guy's got fun. The guy's pretty fun.
Yeah. I guess turning kind of the matchup, because that's, I guess, what Pacers fans would be more interested in on my side of the podcast, at least. What do you see as – so, you know, when I look up and down 1 through 5 and really on the bench, I see the Pacers pretty much having the advantage at every spot except for you could pretty much hit the Kevin Love spot. Is that a fair assessment kind of to start?
Yeah, you know, I think Tristan has given those kind of – I think Sabonis and Turner are better than Tristan at this point and better than Ant. But those guys, I mean, were, you know, last year Larry Nance had that tip in, I think, in Indianapolis to kind of win a game.
Yeah, you mean the one where he may have fouled all the people?
Yeah, you know what? Look, things happen in a game. You just got to roll with it. I think all that stuff, I think those guys can at least compete. You know, but I think at the wing, I think certainly, you know, Brogdon, you know,
Lamb or Warren.
Lamb and Warren, I think, are both a little better than Jetty Osman. You have, you know, I don't know if Doug McDermott's in the rotation at this point, but, like, he's probably a little bit more proven as a commodity than some of the guys the Cavs have. So, yeah, I think the Cavs are also going to skew younger. I mean, you're going to see, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Jetty Osman, who is a third-year guy but kind of an inexperienced third-year guy. They're all pretty young, and they're going to play a bunch of minutes. If you look at the box score for the other night, Jetty plays like 30 minutes. Garland plays above 30. Sexton plays above 30. Porter gets like 20. Those are all really young guys. And 4 of the 9 guys playing being that young, like 22 and under, is kind of going to skew a certain way.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the Cavs team probably – I mean, they probably shouldn't beat the Pacers team. I mean, if we're just looking at straight-up matchup, this Cavs team is designed to be a team of 3 or 4 years down the road, not a team of today. And really, they've been like the past kind of couple years. But I do think there's something in a division matchup, a team who at least, you know, a guy like Sexton, who has seen and Love, really Thompson, who've seen the Pacers plenty of times over the past, you know, let's say almost 5 years now, both guys have been with the team, at least Love and Thompson, where there is something with that division where, like, last year they did catch the Pacers off guard and beat them by a point when they were not very good. So, I mean, I don't necessarily think this game, while on paper the Pacers should win, it seems kind of like the Cavs at least have a chance just because there's that division matchup kind of thing going on.
You were talking about this before we got started here, but you don't feel like you have a great read on this Pacers team for whatever reason right now. Why? I mean, how much of that is the Oladipo thing? How much of that is the new parts? Just what do you just actually make of where Indiana is right now? I mean, it's one game into this season. You know, the Sabonis thing just got settled. But what do you just kind of make of everything right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason I'm most nervous about this game is because I really don't No, the Pacers are actually good right now. I mean, I really just don't know. I think they have some talent for sure. I mean, Jamal Turner looked great in the game one, so does Sabonis, but the bench looks suspect at best. I mean, the young guys, their young rookies were god awful game one, and they're playing 11 guys, which is never a good sign for a team that wants to make the playoffs, that they're having to go to 11 man rotation to start the year. I mean, it just, I don't know. I'm just concerned that this is the kind of game where they lose to the Cavs. It could be a rough start to the season for the Pacers then, because they go Detroit again and they just lost two. And if they start 0-3, 0-4, and 0-5, the odds of making the playoffs get less and less as that happens.
How much, I mean, I guess this is looking forward, but like, how does this team work, I guess, without Oladipo? And like, do you feel like they're preparing for the same version of Oladipo when the Cavs see this Pacers team like down the road later in the season? Like, and Oladipo's back. Like, is this a Pacers team that, like, they're doing stuff now that is going to just allow Oladipo to kind of come in? Or are they going to bend to him a little bit? Like, what is the feel around that right now?
Well, I mean, to me, it feels like they built this roster to fit Oladipo's strengths, kind of the same way they really did 2 years ago when they brought him in. And so, you know, what you build around a certain player and then he's not there, it's sort of empty in a way. I do think when he gets back, it obviously depends on, can he get back to his, like, 2017-18 level, really? But if he can't get up to that – I mean, if he get to that level, then they'll be fine, and they might actually make a decent run in the playoffs. But if he's still trying to figure it out and whatnot, and still trying to, you know, accustom to whatever he's playing, maybe at 90% of his top speed or whatnot, because his knee just can't handle it anymore, that's going to be interesting to watch. Because, I mean, you would think, but if a fully healthy Oladipo with this Pacer team, they're probably one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the East. Without that, it's, like I said, it's sort of suspect where they fall, because he's kind of the piece that makes everything else lock in. When he's not there, it's sort of like a bunch of moving parts that don't always work together in unison.
What did you make of the first game of their season?
I thought I was to overreact to it. I thought the bench looked, like I said, suspect at best. Their rookies were really disappointing. Not right, rookies is the word, but young players like the TJ Leafs and Aaron Holidays. They really just looked like they didn't know what they were doing. I mean, Leaf, you can expect that with the times, but Aaron Holiday, I thought, would have a better start to the year, make somewhat of a leap. I mean, he is, right, he's the same draft class as Sexton and whatnot. I know Sexton's a much higher talent to start, but I don't know. It felt like at times last year, Holiday had shown some of those flashes that he could make a leap to like a rotation point guard and be one of the better point guards of that, was it 2018 draft now, but I don't know. I mean, after game one, I'm concerned about that at least.
Yeah, I'd say on the Cavs side, like, it's interesting because there's still, like, a lot that I feel like I don't know. You know, like, Beeline's rotations, I don't know if this will be the case Saturday, but, like, they were in their opener, they were, like, a little staggered. I don't know if, like, McMillan's in the spot where, like, you feel like, because there is some new pieces, but so many reliable guys from last year, if he sort of has, like, his rotation kind of figured out. But on the Cavs side, it's like, well, he was tinkering a little bit. Guys would come in for like 3 minutes, go out, come back in. That was like Kevin Love and Tristan did that a couple times. They've talked up John Henson like being a rim protector and being like the rim protector on the team to some degree, you know, coming in the preseason. But we haven't seen him play because of some groin issues. And this is him, you know, he was hurt once the Cavs got him last year. He didn't play a game for them. Like, we don't really know kind of what his expectation is. You have a rookie in Dylan Windler who maybe might be active on Saturday, but it seems like a bit of a stretch. It's about the earliest he could kind of come back would have been Saturday's game from a foot issue. But, like, there's just this little bit of tinkering going on. I think the only thing that's, like, stable is, like, I think the way he did the minutes where it was, like, very heavy on, like, 6-7 guys, I think is more of what we're going to kind of see.
Yeah, I actually have a question on the Beeline thing. I mean, does he feel like an NBA coach? Like, it's one game, but does it feel like he has a handle for how, like, I feel like sometimes it's kind of a learning curve for coaches, the rotations and how much to trust certain guys at certain moments, stuff like that. Does he feel like he at least has a feel for that? Because especially going from college to the pros, it's like kind of a whole different game in a way.
So I don't remember who said this. I heard it might have been Amino Hassan who said this on ESPN, but he said that, like, or whoever said this said that, there was like college basketball and NBA basketball like look the same roughly, but the DNA of them is different. I think Beeline's still adjusting to like the differences of how things work. Like, you know, he was talking about watching film like on the plane home from Orlando as they came back to Cleveland. Like, I think the different practice schedule is going to kind of be a long-term adjustment for him. You know, he would play like at this point in his, you know, in his college season right now, they wouldn't be playing like real games yet, I don't think. And
they wouldn't for sure.
Like, they would be playing like really bad teams, like sort of on purpose. Like, you get like a 10 game like warm-up team if you're a Big Ten school. Like, the Cavs played a playoff team or playing playoff teams their first two games, and then like they play Indiana at home on Saturday in their home opener. They fly to Milwaukee and then they help play Giannis on Monday. Like, there's not like the same sort of like role with him. I think that's just going to be a long-term adjustment. But I think the stuff he's saying about being willing to learn, being willing to kind of take on this challenge and stuff like that, and just kind of the way he's approaching it, I do think there is a lot to like. But I think it's just one of those things where, like, I need a season of data and like what he sort of how he sort of adjusts to this and how it works. But I will say, like, they did put a pretty good staff around him. JB Bickerstaff and Antonio Lang are two of the more respected coaches from everyone I talked to when they got hired. Like, those are guys that are really, I think, going to be helpful to him. You know, Bickerstaff's been a head coach twice. Antonio Lang was with Utah these last couple of years under Quinn Snyder, who's one of the very best coaches in the league. I do think, like, the structure is there for him. And he went out and, like, got that stuff. And I do think he's a guy that is willing to kind of learn, even though you would think, like, this is a guy 66. Like, how flexible is he? I do think he's going to be a guy that's willing to learn and kind of go with this process as it kind of unfolds.
Yeah, something I know I've talked a lot about is – in the NBA, it feels like there are probably like really four or five like top coaches, and then it's kind of maybe this middle ground of maybe the next 15 or 20. And it's always interesting when a guy from college comes to the pros, because there's kind of two, right? There's kind of like, well, there's three ways to get to the NBA as a coach. It's like either you go from overseas, you do the David Blatt, which you know very well, you get promoted from within, Ty Lue, you work way up player, assistant, whatever. And then there's B1, which is kind of a whole different way. And it's there's good coaches in all those methods, right? So, like, Stevens came from the college game, and all of a sudden he's fantastic. I mean, Pop probably worked his way through. I'm trying to think of a good player comp for one. I can't think of on top of my head for some reason. But, so, I mean, you know, with the Pacers on their end, it's like, we've always iffy on our coach, right? Well, McMillan's probably good, but he's not great. Can he get better and whatnot? And the thing I'm only interested with like Beilein is watching him is the first year is kind of a throwaway, right? He can go 20 and 25. Nobody's going to care. Does he like kind of improve players? And that's where the Pacers at least succeed at times. It feels like guys get better under McMillan, which is sort of the thing I guess you look for, right, with this Cavs team is, does a guy like Sexton become a better player this year? Now, maybe he would have anyways, no matter who the coach was, but if he becomes better, he gives some credit then to Beilein. Garland, kind of the same thing. Does he become, go from wherever he is now to a player who you think has some future with the team? So, I don't know. I from Michigan, I like to Beilein, but, I mean, the NBA, I mean, you kind of get thrown to the wolves, like you said, kind of right away.
Yeah, and I think there's stuff he's just going to have to get used to doing and being used to kind of implementing in a way he probably didn't at Michigan. For you, what is just like one thing you really kind of want to see how it plays out on Saturday? I don't think these teams are on the same level. I think we're in agreement on that. I think everyone knows that the Pacers, should everything just like at least moderately work out for them, like should be much better than the Cavs, even if, you know, like maybe the Oladipo stuff kind of is a cloud hanging over this. But when you look at this game two of this young season, what is just like one or two things you're really looking to kind of see on Saturday?
Yeah, I think the one thing I'm really looking for is, so you're going to start, the Cavs are going to start Thompson and Love, and they're going to go against Turner and Sabonis, right? So who's going to guard Love if he's going to play kind of out in the corner, which I'm assuming Love's done a lot of.
He's going to be on the perimeter. So like the way Beilein's offense is set up is like Tristan is very much the guy in the middle of the floor, kind of the dive man. At least that's how it's been set up so far.
Yeah, so if that's how it is, then, you know, Sabonis played a lot in the perimeter last time because they really value Turner's rim protection, but Turner really is a better perimeter defender than Sabonis, and Sabonis is a better rebounder, especially with in the past, at least we can talk about that playoff series years ago for sure, where Thompson destroyed the Pacers, especially in that game seven where they needed him most on the glass. So I'm interested to see how the Pacers match up to that. And then on the other end too, it's kind of the same side. Who does Love guard? Who's Thompson guard? You know, is both kind of Turner and Sabonis really operate on the perimeter, even though Sabonis doesn't shoot the three as much, he's constantly setting screens and moving around and whatnot. So that interests me kind of in this game because last, obviously, against the against Detroit, both those guys scored a combined like 57 points, but they didn't get the – Blake didn't play, so they didn't get to see kind of a similar match. You know, we were thinking the first three games, the Pacers season would be against teams that would test their two big thing because they would have – they go against Drummond, and they would go against Love, and then they go against not Drummond and Griffin and Love and Thompson, but obviously they haven't seen two big guys yet, so it's kind of the first time this iteration we'll see that.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I guess for me, the other thing with Indiana is just I just want to see what the rotation, the rejigger kind of wing stuff looks like with no Bogdanovich there, who's just been a staple for them, as you know. Like, I just want to see what that kind of alteration looks like there.
Yeah, I think – so Warren bruised his hip in Thursday's game. It sounded like he plans to play Saturday, but obviously that kind of composes their tip-off time. We'll know. I'm curious, though, with the Cavs, what do you think kind of is the one – or maybe like kind of one strength they have over the Pacers? Or maybe something you're looking for, I guess, in this game.
I guess here's what I'm looking for. Here's my big thing on Saturday. Okay. Kevin Love took 10. I'm going to pull up the box score just so I make sure I have this exactly correct, because I was talking about this on my pod when I recapped it on Wednesday night or whatever that was. So Kevin Love is the best player in the Cavs. I think everyone would agree that he's a very, like, even if he's the best overall player, I think he's the best offensive player on the team. I don't think that's really like a question. I think, you know, Sexton's going to score a lot. He's going to shoot a lot. Garland's going to get there, whatever. So here's just the shot breakdown for this game among the guys who played. So leading the way, Sexton took 15 shots. You had next Jordan Clarkson took 12 in 18 minutes. That's just like good, you know, Jordan, good for you. You got up your shots. Good job. Larry Nance took 11. Tristan Thompson took 11. Then you had Love at 10, and then you get to Osmond at 9, Kevin Porter Jr. and Dele both take 6. Kevin Love, to me, I thought he rebounded well. I thought until it kind of got a little out of hand, like, you know, I don't think his defense was all that bad. I think him only taking 4 shots is, like, a little weird. Played 36 minutes, that's a team high. I haven't had a chance to like rewatch this yet to see, you know, what Orlando, who's a very good defensive team, if they did anything. You know, there's some stuff I think where there's still some kind of connectivity, kind of getting comfortable in the offense, him getting comfortable with Sexton and Garland and whatnot. I think Kevin Love has to shoot more than that if the Cavs are going to be competitive. I would say, like, it's for me, it's him and Sexton probably should be leading the team in shots on a night to night basis. It's just if the offense is going to work the way it should. And then you just kind of off of that, like, you know, who's moving the ball? Garland, I thought, was a guy that really did a good job of that in game one. He had 5 assists, but, you know, Love had 3, Nance had 2, and Jetty had 3. how can those guys kind of continue being the ball movers? And does that be, is that a role Garland actually carved out for himself? That was something I think he actively looked to do in game one. That's not something that I think in his baseline scouting report was something I think anyone really totally expected. His shooting has always been the thing the Cavs have even really talked up about him. So I want to see if that kind of, if him and Sexton are playing together, and that's going to continue to be the case where they play a lot of their minutes together. I kind of want to see how those two guys kind of are kind of passing, and how Garland is really kind of maybe being the one kind of being the distributor.
I will say, if Garland's going to be guarded by TJ Warren, he might have a good day, at least a good opportunity to have a good day.
So you're out on the, are you like enjoying the TJ Warren experience or no? Like it's early, but like, are you, is it weird?
I think he played 32 minutes, maybe 30. I'm trying to remember the exact number. It's definitely weird. I thought he'd have a better start. I thought he was, I mean, he didn't shoot that great in the first game. He shot fine. But defensively, he's still a little lost. There was one play where Warren and Lamb ran into each other in the first game. I mean, I don't know if that's just because they haven't played together and just kind of figuring that out, but they're definitely not high IQ defensive players yet, but you know, we'll see. But I was going to ask you, so what do you, if you had to give a true honest score of this game, like what do you think the final score is?
I think Indiana wins this game by like 10 points if they play well. I think the Cavs are going to be better at home. Their offense wasn't great in game one. I don't know. The Indiana defense will see what it's like early in the season. I think a better game from Love, but I think like 101 to like 90, it's like 93, 94 sounds about right to me. What about you?
Yeah, I was thinking Pacers mid-90s, Cavs mid-80s. Kind of same, maybe it's almost the same game they played against Orlando.
I just watched a Rock fight, and then like, so I was watching the games with my buddy, and we flipped on Nets and the Wolves after. And it was like watching a different sport. Because like everyone was smaller except for like Kat and like Jared Allen, and there was like a bunch of threes. The pace was like Kyrie was doing crazy shit. And I watched a Rock fight, and like Mo Bamba was like bombing threes in that game. It was just like a weird game. And then like the palette shift to that other game was just like quite weird. Like as we're recording this, like I have the Hawks and Pistons on, and like watching the Hawks play is just like a whole other experience and stuff. So I just like would not like to see another Rock fight. That's my one request for Saturday. Actually, I'm going to be there covering the game. I just like don't want another Rock fight, but we might get it.
I will warn you, for the first 3 or 4 minutes of the game against Detroit, the Pacers or Detroit didn't have a single point for I think the first 3.5 minutes. So they did get to 119-110, so they got there eventually, but it was a Rock fight for lots of stretches, at least on Thursday or Wednesday, I guess.
Yeah, let's no Rock fights. Cavs and Pacers, people that are listening, please just no Rock fights. Like let's get some juice in the queue on Saturday.
All right, is there anything else? Rock.
No, that's it. I'm excited about this. I'm excited about seeing these two teams play this year. I hope Oladipo comes back healthy. It's a better league when he's really good.
Yeah, I hope he does too. Go ahead.
One hypothetical with the Sabonis thing.
Yeah.
Let's just say that pairing doesn't work. Would you do something where like it's Turner and something else for Love?
That's a tough one, right?
It's tough, but like if it doesn't work, like would you do something? Would you consider that and like make Love Sabonis your kind of ride or die the next couple of years?
Yeah, my problem with Love is he's on the other side of 30 and he makes a lot of money, and that's what concerns me. And where one, I guess it'd have to go like historically bad, because even if it's like very average, and I would say it was actually pretty good on Wednesday night, because there's just you have to pay Love so much money. So like even if Turner is just can't be an offensive player in this lineup, just his defense alone is probably worth what he's making in salary. You probably can't replace that. So it's hard. I find it hard to find a Love Kevin Love partner outside of Portland, really, right? If you look around the league, pretty much the team that's going to want Kevin Love has got to be the Portland Trailblazers, because the Pacers probably also aren't really competing for a championship this year. Maybe next year if Oladipo's 100% healthy and things break right and somebody makes a jump. But, you don't go in for Love unless you're going to have a shot at winning at all. And so – I mean, I guess the one team I kind of see is Portland probably going for him. You probably see it too.
Yeah, Portland's, I think, one of the obvious ones. But I think Indiana's, like, one of those ones. The other ones, like, maybe that's the other one.
It's hard to trade a player, though, in your division without – like, I guess you got the Cavs are in kind of a rebuild mode, so it wouldn't be that unheard of. But it's
different. Yeah, it's weird. Different timelines. Yeah. I think it's different timelines.
Yeah. No, that's
the case.
That's fair. I mean, what do you think, Russell, you can get for Love in the open market? I mean, what do you think the Cavs should get?
If I'm the Cavs, I'm wanting like a pick and an interesting young player.
Okay. So like, maybe late first.
If I'm calling Portland, I would want like Zach Collins, a pick, and Hassan Whiteside to salary match.
Yeah. I was thinking, who's the other guy they have? Simons.
Fernie Simons. You know, they have like Nasir Little too. Like, that's the kind of thing you're getting into. You're not getting like a blue chip guy for love at this point. But like, if Indiana was like Turner and like a protected first round pick, like, I'd like be like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, the Pacers don't have their first round pick this year either. That also kind of ruins it because they traded.
I'll take the Heat's one in like 2026. Like, if trade with Miami, you know, like, I'll just take that one. Fine.
I don't think it's going to happen. I'm sorry to break it to you. I just still think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I always ask this with people where, like, I think it might make sense. Cavs Twitter had, like, a little bit of, like, thirst after Sabonis when it seemed like that situation was deteriorating the other day. So that's kind of where that came from for me.
Yeah, the problem is even trading Sabonis for love is so hard to make the salaries match. That's the whole problem.
You couldn't do it. You have to wait till the draft. I think if there's, like, someone out there that's like, ooh, I want a love thing, I think that a love trade is more likely next summer in a weak free agency class.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you on that one. I think that's
my uninformed take.
Unless he takes off this next that kind of 3 months where he's so good where a team in the playoff race wants him to basically make that leap. I mean, I think it's this year him getting back into kind of his form and proving he's good enough and going to a team, kind of like Mike Conley did last year.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Very similar. All right, well, I appreciate you doing the podcast with me, Chris. You can follow Chris Manning at CWM Rights. I get that right?
Yes, you did.
So you write for Fearless Store, which is the SB Nation site. You're host of Locked On Cavs. You write other places too, right?
Yeah, find me at Forbes. Find me at Cleveland Magazine from time to time, and any other place you can. I'm available for work, we all are.
And listen to this on the Locked On Cavs feed. You can follow me at FreedomAdam5. I got a co-host who actually tweets a lot more about the Pacers and does a lot. He's like the king of Pacer Twitter. That's Tony Isatis, NBA. I always plug him for his brand. So you can follow him. Obviously, our podcast is Locked On Pacers. You can follow us there. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, give us a 5-star review whenever you're hearing this podcast. That is it for today's Locked On Pacers, Locked On Cavs crossover. And we'll see you guys again next week.
Thanks for listening.